Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from sunny Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And we have got another great show lined up for all of you. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholtz, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda's calling in from Los Angeles, California. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so excited for the program that we have for everyone today. I've been looking forward to this one for weeks. In part,
I've been looking forward to it as well. I can't wait to meet our guest.
Exactly. So I was introduced to Alexandra Franzen by a mutual friend, and there's a marvelous quality about her focus, both as a copywriter, a blogger, a published author, an international workshop leader, which is that ultimately all of her work is about bringing more simplicity into your writing. As she says, because brevity is sexy and being understood is a beautiful thing. And I love that. You know, her insights on communication and productivity and creativity have been featured on Fast Company and Forbes, The Daily Love, The Huffington Post, as well as radio programs from coast to coast. And our wish for today's interview is that you'll be inspired in listening to our conversation to write something simple and true. And this is even for you if you swear you're not a writer, in fact, especially then. So, Alexandra, thank you so much and welcome aboard the program.
Oh, thank you for that tremendous introduction. I'm really excited to chat with you guys this morning.
I'm delighted to have you here, and I have to give a little bit of background. It was wonderful when I was reading your site and thinking about this whole notion of simplicity.
Mm.
Many years ago as an undergraduate, I worked on a project, one of those things where being a college student, you were looking for pay, and the professors would have these projects that they'd put us college students on. And it was actually to sit there and grade the writing samples of students in various grades. And we had different colored pencils for adjectives and adverbs and nouns and compound phrases. And, you know, the page would end up looking like a rainbow of underlines and circles and everything else. And I had to laugh because I realized I tend to write the way I speak, which is often as I'm thinking. So I don't use very much brevity. I have a lot of compound sentences and run-on sentences. So I'm looking forward to learning from today's conversation as well.
Yeah, you know, often writing teachers will encourage people to write the way that they naturally speak. And I think there's a lot of wisdom there because, you know, generally the way that we speak is our most natural voice. And often people feel very comfortable explaining an idea out loud, but then when they have to write it down, they get a bit they start to overcomplicate it. That being said, as you pointed out, there is also something to be said for sort of deciding what you want to say before you put pen to paper rather than the sort of stream of consciousness approach. So, yeah, we can definitely dig into all of that, and it's very fascinating to me.
I love it. I love this notion of simplification. I think in retrospect, one of the reasons I became longer-winded was in my 20s, I was very abrupt and to the point, and people used to say, Linda, go straight for the jugular. And somehow that message came back to me that I needed to build in explanations. And so I headed the opposite way away from simplicity. So how did you come to fall in love with this, this heart of communication and writing?
You know, it's a really great question. And I would say probably my very, very earliest love of language, communication, and everything like that, storytelling, came from watching television as a child. although my mom would probably hate for me to admit it, I was totally hooked on TV, and I loved Sesame Street. I loved the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and my favorite show of all was actually Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And while I didn't quite realize it at the time as a little toddler, Mr. Rogers in particular had a really, really indelible impact on me. He's one of those people who has that rare capacity of being able to convey an idea that is complex, maybe even painful, you know, talking about divorce, talking about bullying, talking about all of these kind of big issues that really affect children. But he was always able to convey that idea in a way that was simple and clear and accessible and true and also very kind. You know, often we think, like you pointed out a moment ago, I think, Linda, that sometimes being very direct can be seen as going for the jugular or very cruel. But really, when done right, I think it can be also very kind and very respectful to be that clear and that simple. So as I've gotten older and as I, you know, became a professional writer and then eventually worked in radio and then later starting my own communication company, I've really been reflecting a lot on that, about people like Carl Sagan, like David Attenborough, like Mr. Rogers, who have that gift of distilling complex information into something so simple and true. And that's really what I strive to do in my own writing and when I teach others to write.
So what was your pathway to deciding that you wanted writing to be your focus in your profession?
Well, my mom likes to say, I'm feeling very very nostalgic this morning, thinking a lot about family and parents for some reason. My mom likes to say that I was always a writer. And in fact, I remember when I was little, her telling me, you know, you're going to be a writer, that's your thing. And I kind of resisted that for a long time. But my very, very first memory, really, as a child was going into a coffee shop with my parents and having them ask me, you know, what do you want to drink? And I had just learned to recognize the words hot and chocolate. And so I pointed and said, hot chocolate. And my parents said, you know, oh, sorry, sweetie, they don't have that here. They were trying to steer me away from sugar and, you know, get me to drink something healthy. And I remember very vividly, like, again, pointing at the words and going, no, I want hot chocolate. And I got it. And in the moment, I realized that some little click went off in my toddler brain where I realized that when you use the right words at the right time with the right people with a smile on your face, you usually get what you want. And that sort of became a thread throughout the rest of my childhood and then later my adult life where, you know, first as an English tutor, then later as a student journalist, then later working in broadcasting, like that idea of weaving words to get what you want without hurting other people, you know, while still leaving the world in better condition than I found it, has always been a thread throughout my work my entire life.
And you've really, you just pointed out that work has really taken you into a lot of different media, radio being quite different than the written word and so on.
Yeah, definitely. My very, very first sort of paid writing gig, I guess you could say, was, I was about maybe 19 or 20. I think it was a student journalism project. And I remember getting that first check, and it was for like, you know, $42 or something like that for an article I had written. But I remember it felt like a big deal. I felt like, wow, like I'm actually getting compensated for this thing that comes naturally to me and that I love so much. From there, journalism was my focus for quite a while. I did a bit of freelance writing for independent newspapers and magazines and then sort of flowed into short story writing, a little bit of poetry, even some playwriting. But then eventually my first sort of real meaty full-time gig was working in public broadcasting. And that was actually really the place where I honed my chops in terms of writing with great brevity and simplicity because, as both of you guys probably know, doing this radio show, you know, on radio, more than almost any other medium except for maybe TV, you really only have a couple of seconds, you know, maybe in between different songs that are playing in a DJ set to convey a message very succinctly. So by writing copy for the radio, I really, really fell in love with the art of that kind of like zen distillation of information into just a few soundbite seconds.
Very cool. You know, Gina, you and I have talked very often about the fact that so much of what we want this radio show to be about is this notion of relationship. And I don't think there is relationship without language. And Gina, you use language so adeptly in teaching. And it's really cool, isn't it, to think about all the different ways language gets used in relationship creation, whether it's through media, through teaching, and so on.
Well, it really is, and brevity is certainly not one of my strengths. So to hear that Alexandra not only is adept at language, but brevity with language is really huge. Language is so important in making any kind of impact. You can't really succeed in your business without being able to communicate effectively, can you, Alexandra?
No, you know, that's actually something I've been thinking about a lot lately as I've been sort of planning out, you know, the rest of my year and the next year of my business. I really believe that, you know, if you look at any sort of quote-unquote problem that you're having in your business or even in your life, if you really trace it back to the root, I really believe that every business problem is, at its essence, a communication problem. You know, like if you're...
I totally
if your
agree
problem,
with that.
Yeah, if your problem is that you're not selling enough products, well, you know, perhaps you're not communicating the value of those products clearly enough or to the right people. If your problem is that you're having sort of like slow-moving projects or productivity is really low, probably if you look back at your inbox, you're going to see long threads of sort of rambling, unclear emails between you and your team that aren't quite getting to the essence of why this project needs to happen now. You know what I mean? So you really can trace it back, and I find that almost everything is ultimately a communication problem. That's why I so love my work as a copywriter and also as a writing teacher for business owners, because they come to me with all kinds of problems, and by finding the right words, we can usually unlock some kind of solution.
Fascinating. I actually have meetings today with three members of one of my clients' management teams where things aren't going smoothly, and they finally, at long last, realize that there's no ill intent. There's just really a consistent breakdown in conveying what they're each trying to communicate to each other, because they each come from such radically different backgrounds that they are more prone to misinterpret what each other is saying rather than have this shared common language and so on. So I'm continuously fascinated by this whole notion of each of us being wordsmiths, and you're doing it to get paid, and I think maybe that's one of the big secrets in business, is that we're all getting paid to be wordsmiths, only most of us don't register that fact.
Oh, my gosh, absolutely. I was doing some research towards the end of last year as I was developing a new e-course that was all about email writing. It was called I Heart Email, I Love Email. And some of the statistics I found were fascinating. Like, for example, most people, and by most, I'm using air quotes that you can't see because we're talking on the radio, but most people, whether they have a 9-to-5 job or they're running a business, you know, in some kind of full-time capacity, will write about a novel's worth of emails every single year. A whole novel, like hundreds and hundreds of pages of emails every year. That's just work-related emails. Like, that doesn't include, you know, friend, personal, all of that stuff. So that's a perfect example of how, whether you like it or not, whether you realize it or not, everyone is essentially a communication professional. Like, we're all writing and communicating constantly. So you might as well, you know, find ways to fall in love with it and do it well. I really remind that to people when they say, oh, I'm just not a writer, that's not my thing. It's like, well, you know, it sort of is, whether you realize it or not.
It's so true. You know, there's certain fundamental ways that people realize they must refine how we each use language. They, we, I'm all over the place grammatically today, aren't I? But, but you know, when we talk about simplification, I think one of the primary ways everybody realizes they really have to think about the language they're using is when we introduce ourselves or when we answer that question that somebody just pops off to us of, what do you do? How do you work with people to help them really get to the heart of how to make it simple and understood?
Yes, this is actually one of my very, very favorite things to talk about and teach about, because I find that particularly in the business world, the entrepreneurial world, the kind of the creative creator world, people get really, really stuck and frustrated when they have to distill all of what they do into just a few sentences. You know, it's that moment where someone asks you, so what do you do? And you sort of like have that cold sweat break out, and you know that you're about to start rambling, and you can already see the other person's eyes glazing over, and it just, it feels awful, right? You don't feel understood It's a terrible feeling. So the way that I approach writing an elevator pitch or a personal introduction or just, you know, your everyday answer to the question, so what do you do, is I really break it down into two or three little tiny pieces. And I'll kind of walk you through how I might introduce myself as an example of what that looks like. You actually heard echoes of my introduction when you introduced me a few moments ago. So if somebody says, you know, hey, Alex, what's your deal? What do you do? I might say, I'm a copywriter and a blogger and a writing teacher. Ultimately, all of my work is about bringing more simplicity into your writing because brevity is totally sexy, in my opinion, and being understood is a beautiful thing. So we hear kind of three elements there. I said, I'm a blank and a blank and a blank, right? I kind of pack in all my job titles just to get that out of the way and kind of anchor in fairly simple terms what it is that I do. I'm a copywriter, blogger, writing teacher. Then, and this is the piece that most people are missing, but in my opinion, the piece that's really important. Then I say, ultimately, all of my work is about bringing more simplicity into your writing. And you might say, but really, all of my work is about, or honestly, all of my work is about, or at the end of the day, I'm just trying to dot, dot, dot. Whatever kind of transitional phrase you use there, I like ultimately because it kind of spins everything together. That line really sums up what I'm about. It sums up, you know, in a very simple way, my mission, what I'm trying to give to the world, my ministry. And that's the piece that gets people excited and kind of causes the person listening to you to lean in a little bit. You're also speaking to the value of what you do. Ultimately, all of my work is about bringing more simplicity into your writing. And then the third line is kind of optional, but I like it. It's the little because. It's kind of the little tail. Because brevity is sexy and being understood is a beautiful thing. So we've got the sort of the job title line, the ultimately what it's all about line, and then the because line. This is why I do it. You can also end your personal introduction with a question. That's a great way to create a conversation. I know you guys are all about relationship building. So I might end my introduction by saying, you know, so tell me, what's the hardest thing you've ever had to write and why? Start a dialogue between me and the person I'm talking to, whether we're face-to-face or online. So that's how I approach writing a personal introduction. Obviously, there's a lot of other things that I do in my life and my business. I'm also an author. I also teach e-courses. I also do this. I also do that. But I don't need to say everything in this quick little introduction. I just want them to feel something and remember one thing about me, which is that I'm all about language and simplicity.
I love it. Well, I'm going to be taking a stab at it for myself because I've got a place I'm going to introduce myself tomorrow morning. So let's see. While Gina thinks about her stab at it, mine is that I'm a business coach and mentor and consultant. And ultimately, all of my work is about helping business owners and entrepreneurs unleash the potential in their business because wouldn't life be more fun if you loved what you were doing every day when you're getting out of bed, as well as making it profitable so you could make a bigger difference in the world?
Yeah, exactly. Life would be a lot more fun if you loved getting out of bed and made money every time you did it.
Exactly. I'll have to go back and listen to what I just said so I can use it again tomorrow morning.
Fantastic.
Gina, what about
you? For me, Gina Gaudio-Graves is the dean and founder of Directions University, where we help entrepreneurs with four areas. We help them to get direction for their life and for their business. We show them how to give direction to their customers and prospects. And in the end, our goal is to help them impact the direction of the world. Everything I'm about is really related to transformation through relationships. And we really help entrepreneurs to transform their own lives through a variety of relationships that they experience through their business.
There was one piece in there that really just like made my heart sing, which is where you kind of connected how, you know, creating direction for your life can help you create direction for your business, can help you direct your clients, your customers, the people who work for you, and ultimately influence the direction of the world. I almost wanted you to end right there because it was such a like, ah, moment. but I also love the stuff that you added as well about how ultimately it all comes back to relationships. Beautifully done, both of you guys. I feel like applauding. Yay!
Well, actually, and, I really want to meet with you after the radio show is over because one of the things that we are most challenged by at Directions U is coming up with how to language this in something shorter than what I just shared. You have no idea how difficult this has been for 7 years for us. And we're at a place where it's really necessary for us to come up with that one sentence that encapsulates the meaning. And oh my gosh, all of the ones that we've come up with so far are just not good, Alexandra.
Well, it sounds like you might be further along than you think, because a lot of what you just told me really resonated. I think for you, it less than searching for the right words, it may just be more of an editing process. Like, again, in an introduction, especially when we're passionate about our work, our tendency is that we want to just say everything, right? Like, we want them to understand everything about us. And really, I always am I'm sort of encouraging people to exercise a bit of restraint. You can think of it almost as a seduction, right? You're just going to give them a little taste of what you're about. You don't actually have to convey or pack it all in to that opening line because, as you well know, that opening line or two is designed to spark that relationship. You just want to pique their interest so that they will then dive deeper, so that then they'll read your about page, so that then they'll read your manifesto, so that then they'll reach out to you and you can have a deeper conversation about the work that you do.
Like it. Thank you. That helps a lot.
Yes. Totally. And I wanted to mention, you know, for both of you guys and anyone listening, I actually quite recently kind of put together a few exercises on how to craft a personal introduction, and it's in a free workbook on my website called How to Introduce Yourself to Anybody. So if anybody is struggling to introduce themselves to anybody, you can find that on my website. It's just alexanderfranzen.com, and under the page that says Things for You, there's a list of some free articles and resources, and you can grab it there if it's helpful.
Very cool. You know, one of the lessons that I had to absorb for myself and really take into how I introduce myself and other ways I use language is as a consultant, as a coach, as this long-winded explainer of things, I was really thankful to have somebody say, don't share your process with people. They don't care about the process. They care about the result. And it really helped me sit back and say, wow, I'm giving this long list of all the things I do with people rather than what's the result that I create. And so it's a different frame of reference.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because I actually had a really beautiful conversation with a friend of mine recently. This friend is a beautiful writer in her own right. She does sort of a different style of writing than me. But she said to me, you know, Alex, like, I love that you're all about brevity, and I love that you're all about simplicity, and I think that's really great, and I can learn from that. But, like, I'm a long-winded writer. Like, that's how I write. That's how I want to write. I like to take people on sort of like deep spiraling stories. I want them to get lost in my words. I want them to hang around and read what I'm writing for hours. And for me, you know, this whole idea of like distillation and brevity, there are times in my life where that makes sense, but really in my own writing, that's not how I want to write. And it was really interesting to hear that feedback. And what I realized is, you know, I'm all about brevity and simplicity. That's what feels good for me when I'm writing. I love getting to the point. But for others, that may not be the ideal format. And what I try to encourage people to remember is, as long as you're being understood and having the impact that you want to have, it doesn't matter. You know, maybe for the audience that you have, that more sort of like flowing, spiraling, loop over on a tangent, come back approach is working for you. And if so, great. If it's not working for you, then we might want to explore other ways to present your ideas to the world. But does that make sense? So it's not just that it's about brevity. It's about being understood and creating the result or the impact that you want to have in whatever format that lends you to take.
It absolutely makes sense. And I'm thinking about the different people whose writings I make a point of following. So I think of Danielle Laporte, who both has this incredibly poetic longer material, and then she has her daily truth bombs, which can be 2 to 7 words. That's it.
Yes.
And I enjoy getting them because there's a depth of meaning behind the phrase or the sentence that she's sharing. And it's almost like she has her own mini, I'll say success quote, but it's not quite worded that way. And yet those of us who are putting our content out in the media are putting it out, whether it's on Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, or our own blog articles, really have to become, I was going to say a juggler. That's the image that just came to me, but it's sort of adept at changing our modes of communication, our modes of putting our language together.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a little tip for that that helps across a lot of different platforms and styles of writing and places where you need to write. And it's really just a little three-word reminder. It's feel, know, do. And you may have seen iterations of this in other places, other sort of writers and communication teachers talking about this kind of idea. But essentially, whenever I'm writing, and this practice is now so ingrained in my brain that I don't even think about it, it's like muscle memory. But whenever I sit down to write something, whether it's a blog post, whether it's a TED Talk video script for one of my clients or a text message to my boyfriend, like whatever it is, I think to myself, what do I want my reader to feel? What do I want my reader to know, and what do I want my reader to do, feel, know, do? Establish how I want them to feel. You know, maybe I want them to feel uplifted. Maybe I want them to feel challenged. Maybe I want them to feel kind of stuff and angry, like they want to take action to fight for something. When I decide how I want them to feel, that will then influence the tone of what I'm writing, right? That'll influence sort of the feeling of it, the emotional quality that I'm trying to evoke. When I decide what I want them to know, that's the content, right? Like that's the how-to, that's the information, that's the request, that's the sort of, you know, the nuts and bolts of the what it is that I want to stick in their brain. That might be an instruction if I'm sending an email to my assistant or something like that. And then the do piece is the call to action, right? This is the, okay, do this now. This is the think about this for the rest of the day. It's whatever action I want the person to take. So by remembering those three words, feel, know, do, if you can sort of figure out in your own mind what you want your audience to feel, know, and do before you start writing, it's an amazing way to collect your thoughts so that when you do begin to write or speak, everything flows with more ease and it's much more focused.
Very cool. When you're teaching, I guess part of what people are asking for your help with is how they can create content that's both more memorable and more powerful, because, again, someone's going to gravitate to you because they hear this message that it can be done with simplicity. So is that the tool to use for creating that focus, or are there other approaches or stepping stones for people who really need attention?
That's certainly one of them. Another thing that I often encourage people to try is, well, I'll back it up and say, you know, when you think about the speeches, the talks, the articles, the essays, the book chapters that have really left an impact on you, and by impact I mean like you were thinking about it days or weeks or months or years later. Like I think about, for example, that amazing TED Talk by Simon Sinek where he introduces the idea of start with why, right, where he talks about how successful companies are those that that establish why they do business and convey that successfully to their customers, and that's what creates sort of rabid fans. I remember the first time I saw that talk, it stuck with me for days and days and days. And I think the reason for that was he introduced one very simple idea, and he reiterated it again and again and again and again using different examples to illustrate it, and then just brought it home at the end where he reiterated yet again, companies that start with why, that start with why they're in business, are the ones that succeed, are the ones that attract, you know, loyal and ferocious fans for life. So what I learned from that and what I see in a lot of the media out there is it's the people who choose one simple idea. You can almost think of it as like one reminder that you want to give your audience, a reminder that you'd like to have echoing in their heads for the rest of the day. When you focus a blog post, when you focus an email, when you focus, you know, a talk on just one idea, it's so much more powerful than if you try to cover, you know, 3 ideas, 5 ideas, 10 ideas, or sort of like stitch it all together in some way. I find that the stuff that I love, the stuff that I remember, is usually very singular and focused. So as just a very simple exercise to kind of play with this, you know, if you've got to write a newsletter later today or you've got to write a blog post for your business later this week, look at the topic that you've chosen and then ask yourself, what is the one reminder that at the end of this post I would like to have echoing in my readers' ears? Maybe the reminder is you have permission to take the day off. Even though you're a busy mom, you should do it. Maybe that's the reminder that you want to give people. Or maybe the reminder is, you know, discipline everything. If you want to get where you're going, you've got to keep marching, marching, marching. Maybe that's the reminder that you want to leave with people. But whatever that reminder is, decide what it is before you start writing posts and then reverse engineer to get to that point. And that will make your writing so much more focused, so much more powerful, and ultimately more memorable because it's that one idea that people will actually be able to remember.
And I like to tell my students that as they're writing a blog post, they really aren't serving their readers well unless they're telling them what to do next. So I don't like them writing posts that are just fluff, that are just buy my stuff. I want them to really write articles that help people to solve a problem and then tell them what to do next through some sort of a call to action. So that one idea is really what is that next step going to be and reverse engineer from there to write everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like for you, if we're going back to this kind of feel, no, do approach, you really like to decide what the do step is, right? What that call to action is going to be so you can make sure that as you write the post or write the newsletter or write the essay, it's really circling back to that action step. And that's probably because you, as a business coach and as someone who works in the realm of business, you're all about action, right? Like you want people to get results and move forward. So that makes sense. It would be a particular emphasis for you and the clients that you work with.
Absolutely. And what I've seen over and over and over again, an article that's just 17 tips on fill in the blank with the topic, no one really does anything with it to start with. So if you're going to write that kind of an article and not tell them what to do next, you're really not serving them very well at all. So the do step for me is really a big part of serving and making a difference and really getting people to consume and do what you're telling them to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we see a lot of sort of cookie cutter style blog posts where, you know, it's just 5 steps to do this, 10 steps to do that, et cetera. And those types of posts can be, you know, inspiring and interesting. But you're right. I think ultimately there's got to be some kind of bigger action focus for the reader so that at the end of the list they don't just go, well, that was kind of fun, but they actually do something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Words.
It was really helpful that you just went over those three aspects again. In listening to the discussion, it gave me a chance to think about where I gravitate to, and I think I gravitate to I want people to understand and then move into action.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, some of the clients and students I've worked with over the years have turned to me and said, what's the right thing to do? Well, there's often several right things they could do. And so my work is so often about helping them get clarity about what they want as their result and therefore what their choices of action are. But most importantly is select the one you'll actually follow through and do. It doesn't matter what I tell you to do. It doesn't serve anybody. It's helping people point out to them what they could do and having them make the commitment. And so I spend a lot of time in the explaining and not in the feeling. And the do, it to me, becomes a quick summary. <You know? laughs> It's fascinating to be able to go back and deconstruct, you know.
And Linda, why don't we tell them how to find Alexandra's website as well?
Absolutely. And I think she may have gotten bumped off the call, so she will dial back in and join us again. So Alexandra's material, her programs and so on can all be found at Alexandra Franzen, F-R-A-N-Z-E-N, Franzen.com, AlexandraFranzen.com. And it's really quite lovely because if you go to her site, you'll see in addition to really beautiful to the point and succinct language from her, but also these tools that she talked about. And I particularly love the fact that if you click on the World Tour, you see where it is that she's going and things for you, as she described, as well as these wonderful tools that you can use. And, you know, Gina, I think about it in the context of us and the writing that we know we're going to be doing. And, you know, Alexandra, I would love to know if you find that if you're trying to teach someone who hasn't thought of themselves as a writer, if you have an easier time of it than with someone who realizes they need to stylistically try and change their writing.
Yeah, you know, I equally love connecting and working with people who identify as writers, you know, as a profession, and people who claim that they're not writers. I think that there's fun to be had in either camp. I often find that with the type of person who says, I'm not a writer, it's not my thing, or even I hate writing, or writing is hard, it's such a pleasure to see that person get to a spot where they realize, like, writing can be simple. It can be as simple as just writing the way that I naturally speak and almost like transcribing my thoughts onto the page. And then with people who consider themselves to be professional writers, it's just as refreshing to see them go, huh, like writing can be simpler. Maybe I don't need to spend 8 hours a day bent over my laptop, you know, pouring ideas onto the page. Maybe I can just choose one simple idea that I want to convey to my reader and express it in a couple of sentences. And that's all I need to do. So for almost, I mean, I really believe that there's almost no one on the planet who couldn't benefit from having permission to keep their communication just a little more focused and a little more simplified.
Very cool. Now, in from our conversation that we had a couple of months ago, you had a book that you were going to be coming out with. Has it hit the stands yet?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Last fall, kind of end of fall, beginning of winter, I had my very first book come out, which was, as you can imagine, just a total lifelong dream come true. It was really amazing. That book was called 50 Ways to Say You're Awesome. And it was essentially a collection of really playful, colorful, slightly quirky compliments and expressions of gratitude that you could literally tear out. The pages of the book were perforated, and there's a space on the back of each card where you could do almost like a Mad Lib, fill-in-the-blank thank you note, and then send that note to somebody that you love. So the book was very, very playful. It was definitely designed to be kind of a gift book for the holidays, and it was so much fun to see people playing with it, and really surprising to see how much kids liked it. I guess they shouldn't have been surprised since it was pretty playful and colorful, but it was amazing to get little photos sent in to me from parents with their little kids playing with the book, tearing up the pages, scribbling all over it, kind of an unexpected bonus that really made me so, so happy.
I love it. And is it still available?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, all the major online retailers, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, places like that, you can definitely buy it. It's still available in stores as well. Somebody actually just in Canada the other day said that they saw it at their store. So I think it's international, at least in the U.S. and Canada, possibly Europe as well, but definitely still for sale. And it's pretty adorable.
I love it.
People will enjoy it.
I love the heart of it, which is all about teaching people how to be generous with their compliments. And
yes,
I know that generosity
absolutely
is a big theme for you.
It really is. You know, I thought about, it's so funny, I'm circling back to my mom again. I think I should give her a call today. She's clearly on my mind. But as a child, I was raised in a household where when somebody did something nice for you, you know, when someone did you a favor or gave you a present or did something kind, my mom would sit us down and essentially like force us to write handwritten thank you notes that we would put in the mail. And like, if you did not write a handwritten thank you note to Aunt Mimi, like you were persona non grata for like the rest of the month. Like this was a non-negotiable thing that we did in my family. And at the time, I think all of us kids kind of would groan and be like, oh, like, do we really, can we just call or whatever? Like we didn't want to do it. But as I grew older, I realized that that practice of expressing my appreciation in words, in writing, particularly in handwriting, was really powerful. And it was something that I missed as I grew a bit older and kind of stopped doing it for a while. So a couple of years ago, I made it a part of my life again. And it was as simple as just buying a stack of blank postcards and keeping them by my desk. And every Sunday or, you know, once a week, I would just kind of choose a couple of people in my life, friends I hadn't talked to for a while, or a client who had hired me and we had a particularly great session, or just anyone in my world. And I would just start writing a couple of thank you notes every single week and mailing them out. And not only did it make me feel great, you know, I had that beautiful kind of almost like neurotransmitter spike of happiness every time I did it, but it led to such beautiful connections and rekindling of connections and relationships in a way that I really couldn't have anticipated. You know, it would be someone calling me to say, oh my God, I just got your postcard. I was having the worst day. I pinned it on my bulletin board. I'm so grateful that you sent it to me. And hey, can we have lunch next week? So it was the most simple and charming and uplifting way for me to feel great about myself, for me to remember all of the people who love me and are around me in a positive way, and also to keep those relationships alive in a way that was much more powerful than just firing off a text message or an email. So that's why today I'm such a huge advocate of handwritten thank you notes in particular, but really just expressing your gratitude and expressing generosity of spirit in any way that you choose.
And I know how important you consider generosity to be with this idea of being a writer, not only upon the occasions of trying to show appreciation and acknowledgement to others, but when it comes down to finding, I'll say, the inner hidden writer in all of us,
the expressor
of our own ideas.
Yeah, you know, in business, it's a tricky territory for many because, you know, obviously we're in business to, well, most of us are in business to influence the direction of the world, as Gina put it, and to make a positive dent in the universe, but we're also in business to make money, and there's no getting around that, and I don't think it's a bad thing. But what that often leads to is people really getting kind of confused or overwhelmed with, like, well, you know, which elements of my work and which elements of my writing and which ideas do I give away for free versus which ones do I charge for, and where do I figure out where to draw that line and what's appropriate and all of that stuff. And, you know, in my very, very early days of business, I spent more time kind of watching what other people were doing in my space and wondering, like, well, should I do that? Is that the right model for me? What's going on here? Da-da-da-da. And as I sort of came into my skin as an entrepreneur, came into my own, rather, I realized that what feels best for me, and may not feel best for everyone, but what feels best for me is to be almost like ridiculously over-the-top generous with my ideas, meaning, you know, give away the free worksheet, give away the free script, give away 10 scripts, give away all the tools, the best ideas, free classes, just like give, because it feels good to be of service in that way, and it's easy for me, and I know that it's helpful for others. And then when I do have something that I want to sell, when I have a workshop series, when I have an offering for my clients, when I have a book or an ebook, it's like my audience is so primed and so ready, and they already think of me as someone who's just over-the-top generous, that when I finally have something that I want them to buy, they're all over it. And I don't have to promote it or push it or convince them or persuade them. They get it. They've already experienced what I'm all about. So for me, that approach of like just giving in a way that feels so delicious and helpful, so that by the time I have something to sell, they're all over it, works so well for me. And I find that it works well for a lot of people, but they have to get over that initial hurdle of, but if I give so much away, what am I going to have left? And to that I would say, there's always more where that came from. You are really limitless in your capacity to serve and come up with great ideas. You're not going to run out. And that's something that I think people have to sort of believe to be true before they can walk down that road. But for me, it's been a very powerful path.
Well, and the other thing is, most entrepreneurs that I work with, at least, they don't realize that there are always two sets of problems that their audience needs help with. There's a set of problems that is the problems that your audience knows they have that they're actively looking for solutions to. And then there's that set of problems that's the you don't know what you don't know stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people that work with me go out giving their best stuff related to the you don't know what you don't know problems. And they can't figure out why no one can find them. Well, their people are out there talking about a completely different thing, And they're like, oh, yeah, we don't need to talk to them about that. That's not what we do. Well, you have to talk to them about what they know they want, what they're actively looking for solutions to, but they can't find you in the first place. The key is to start there, then give them that do step that brings them a step closer into your world so that then you can talk about the stuff they really need that they didn't even know they needed to hear about.
Yes, that is such a great point to make, and I can think of a perfect example from my own business where that was very true. You know, at the end of the day, as I mentioned a couple times in this conversation, my work is all about simplicity, and even deeper than that, my work, at least I like to think my work, is about teaching people how to communicate in a way that is clear and compassionate. Like, I'm very, very big on using language not just to get what you want and get to the point, but to truly leave others in better condition than you found them, to love. However, I know that my clients and customers are not sitting there at night Googling, how can I communicate with more compassion and love, probably.
Right.
What they're probably Googling is, how do I fill my client docket? Or how do I promote my workshop? Or, you know, more kind of like base level nuts and bolts of how do I get this thing done? So when I create products, when I write blog posts, I try, just as you pointed out, speak a little bit more to that sort of like immediate desire or need while folding in the bigger message throughout. But the bigger message is not always the headline. And I think that's a really good point. And it's one that people struggle with sometimes. They might think like, well, you know, if I don't address the bigger message right away, it's like I'm selling out or I'm selling myself too short or I'm being too reductionist or whatever. But I disagree. I think you're absolutely right. You know, just like a great yoga teacher will meet the student where they're at in their body that day, you have to meet your customers and clients where they're at in their minds and their hearts that day and meet them there and then take them on the journey that you want to go on.
Absolutely. And I find that when my students really understand what we're talking about here, it makes it a lot easier for them to not feel like they're giving everything away. Because now they really can talk about stuff they didn't even know they should be talking about to start with.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point.
Go ahead, Linda.
And as you were sharing this idea of be generous and give it away, you know, there's so many marketing and advertising masters who are out there now who are talking about the fact that, yes, the ratio itself changes over time, but the fact is that if you really want to be creating relationship with your ideal customer, your ideal reader, and so on, that there is a true ratio of giving before asking. Gary Vaynerchuk
mm-hmm.
about in his latest book, Jab, 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 Right Hook, what he's actually trying to convey is give, 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 then ask. And, you know, that there is this real ratio of giving to people, giving ideas, giving information, giving suggestions, giving how-tos, giving insights before making a request. And then it feels like the balance, all is right with the world.
Yes, yes, yes. And another way to think about it, you know, if for whatever reason the idea of giving, giving, giving feels like draining or depleting, you can also think of it as just, you know, building a public body of work that people can see and experience before you say, okay, now pay me for a piece of this or pay me for the next step. You know, if you're exploding out into the blogosphere or to the internet and you have no public body of work, you have no materials, no worksheets, no ideas that people can engage with, why would anyone want to buy your stuff? How would they even know what you're about? You know, so you can think of it, again, as either giving and then asking, you know, jab, 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 right hook, or just simply, I'm creating a body of work. And then eventually, once it's established and it's real and it's rolling, then it'll be natural for me to invite people to go deeper into my body of work with whatever offering I want to give to them.
Do you find it's different when you're working with clients that are service professionals or offline bricks and mortar businesses versus online businesses?
I would say Yes and no. I mean, of course, the people who are trying to operate, you know, exclusively in the online space have unique challenges, just as people who are operating in the brick-and-mortar space have unique challenges. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I think we all kind of struggle with the same things, which is, how do I get people to buy my stuff? How do I get people to sort of come along with me on a journey and be my customers for life? How do I get people excited about what I do so that they're talking about me and they're being, you know, my advocates, my allies, my little marketing emissaries? I think we all struggle with the same challenges. So there's a lot of sort of universal lessons and truth that can really apply regardless of whether your business is virtual or not.
So what do you recommend that people do if they're trying to figure out how to stay motivated to keep writing and creating, even when they're worrying that nobody's actually reading what they're putting out there?
Yeah. This is a huge, huge conversation for me right now in my own head and with also with my readers and clients and customers. And I want to tell a little story that I think will set this up for my philosophy on it. You know, I'm at a point in my business and my work now where I'm not famous. I don't have people mobbing me on the street or anything like that. But, you know, I've built up a bit of an audience, a bit of a following, and it feels good. And it felt a little surreal, but, you know, I have an audience, and I'm aware of that. That being said, you know, even I have days where I wonder, am I, you know, full of it? Like, is this actually helpful? Does this matter? Does anyone care? You know, what am I doing with my life? Or even, you know, I'm nobody compared to some of the other heavy hitters out there. You know, I may have an audience, but it's a small one, comparatively speaking. So I have days like that, too. And I had a day like that about a year ago at this point where I was really down and I was really feeling uncertain about if the work that I was doing mattered. And on that day, almost like as this weird serendipitous kind of kismet moment, I got an email from a woman I'd never heard of before, we'd never interacted before, and she was a mom. She was a foster mom, actually. She had just taken in a teenage girl. She lived in Europe, and she told me that her daughter, this teenage girl who she had just adopted, had been abused and had just the most horrific, like, nightmarish childhood that you can imagine. And I won't go into the details because we don't need to, but her daughter had a very, very difficult childhood, and now, in this new home, in this place of safety, her daughter was just starting to kind of rebuild her self-esteem and just starting to express herself again and starting to write again and journal. And she had been, somehow her daughter had found my blog and had found a list of sort of conversation prompts and questions for making new friends that I had posted. And she was using that at her new school to try to make friends with other teenagers. And her mom wrote to me and said, you know, if you could send an email to my daughter and just encourage her to keep going, that would be the world to her, that would be the world to me, you know, we would really appreciate it. And as I was reading this email, I just started just uncontrollably sobbing. Like, I couldn't hold it back. And I realized it was such a beautiful, like, ego check moment. I realized that, you know, you never ever know when you publish something online or when you say something or in a conversation at a dinner party, but particularly the online space where you feel a little bit anonymous sometimes, you never know whose life your words are going to impact. You just don't know. And it could be just one person. It could be one teenage girl who's trying to get over a terrible past living halfway across the world. But if you change her life, even in a small way, isn't that enough motivation to keep writing? Isn't that enough? I mean, like, what more do you need? So in that moment, I realized, like, it's not about the numbers. It's not about the audience size. It's not about the conversion rate. It's not about, you know, any of that stuff that we get so hung up on. Just be helpful. Just be of service and trust that your words are going to impact somebody in a profound and fundamental way. So that was a huge clicking and turning point moment for me. And since then, I've thought a lot more about how the things we can tell ourselves and the things we can do to stay motivated to keep creating, even when we feel invisible. A really beautiful little reframe is a post I wrote just the other day, actually, about this very subject, where you can really reframe your audience size in a way that's playful and that works for you. So, for example, if you only have 6 people on your mailing list, that's like a beautiful dinner party that you're talking to every single week. Those are 6 human beings who chose to be there to listen to you. That's your dinner party, so entertain them, right? If you have even 300 people who read your blog every month or every week, that's a packed airline jet. Like, that's a whole airplane full of people who are there because they want to be there. That's epic, and that's something to be proud of, and that's something to be honored and respected. So the bottom line is, people are people, and humans are humans, and fans are fans, and friends are friends, and readers are readers, and however many you have, whether it's 6 million, respect them and give them everything you've got, give them the best of what you've got, and also know that you never know whose life your words are going to impact, and that's a very powerful thing to keep you motivated to keep writing and creating.
Thank you so much for that. I so appreciate your sharing that. You know, I've been giving a lot of thought to what's going on with Google Plus versus Facebook and so on, and I realized that, you know, it's all about our own mindset and power of our own intention as we put together what we're writing and putting out in the world. And one of the gifts of what Google Plus is doing is that they notify you when someone has added you to their circle. And I realized I had a different feeling in my body than just knowing I had, quote, followers on Facebook, where it was just a number. But in Google Plus, where it's an identity of a person, it felt and feels much more intimate and much more that I know who's going to see what I'm writing when I put it out there. A very different feeling.
Yeah, definitely. One of my blog readers actually left a comment the other day that was so beautiful and really well put, where she said, you know, when you're, again, to kind of reframe the numbers and reframe how this whole machine works, if you're at a dinner party and you're telling a story and 6 people are listening to you, that feels really good. But those 6 people are just kind of there, not quite by accident, but like, you know, they didn't have to be there. They didn't ask to be there. They didn't ask for you to start telling the story. They're just sort of listening because they're there. However, if 6 people are reading your blog, they chose to be there, right? Like, they could be anywhere else on the internet. They chose to be there with you, and that's really powerful. You know, if they choose to add you to their circle, that's one human being saying to another, I dig what you're creating, and I want more of it. And that's really, really big, and that's not something to be tossed aside, whether it's 6 people, again, or 60 or 600 or 6 million.
Very cool. Now, you've got workshops that you're leading as well that I'd love us to take the last couple of moments and share with people what it is that you're doing as a workshop leader now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the origin for this workshop series, which I sort of began in late 2012 and has sort of spiraled on to today, is as much as I love working with clients and companies and sort of doing their writing for them, it's even more exciting to me to teach people how to write for themselves. You know, earlier in this conversation, we mentioned how, whether you like it or not, whether you realize it or not, pretty much every single human being on the planet writes a lot. You know, we're all sort of communication specialists, whether we realize it or not. So my intention with this workshop series is really to largely to work with artists, coaches, consultants, entrepreneurs, you know, people who are running their own businesses, and show them how to write for their businesses in a way that is clear and kind and true with a great deal of simplicity. I find that a lot of business owners tend to overthink, overanalyze, overcomplicate all of their language, and when they finally have permission and also like some frameworks and scripts and tools to write with simplicity, everything swings into motion. There's a sense of momentum that builds. You know, it's the difference between, oh my God, I can't launch my website because I can't get my homepage copy nailed down, and then finally having those words and everything just goes boom. You know, it's like a rocket ship taking off. So the workshop series is called Write Yourself Into Motion because it really is about building momentum and excitement and energy behind your work by finding the right words to tell the world what you're about and what you do. And this year, I'm doing, gosh, I think about probably somewhere between 10 and 13 different cities. So it's quite a big tour. I'm going to Australia, to Canada, United States of America, of course, where I live. And it's going to be pretty great. Really, really, really floored and excited. And at this point, a lot of the cities are already sold out, but there are definitely tickets available in some other places. So if that appeals to you, definitely check it out. It's certainly quite a party once you're there.
And all of that's available on your site at alexandrafranzen.com. So
yes, of course.
Very cool. Wow, Alexandra.
Well, thank you so much, Alexandra. Go ahead, Linda.
Go ahead, Gina.
Thank you so much, Alexandra. This has been a great hour, and I know I'm looking forward to going through that workbook. I've already downloaded it myself. I encourage everyone else to go to alexandrafranzen.com and grab a copy of it for yourself as well.
Excellent. Yeah,
thanks,
have fun
Linda.
With that. I'd love to see what you come up with.
Okay, I will share it with you when I do. Thank you. And Linda, I will be back next week, same time, same place, for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.